Item 2 is a public hearing for a subdivision and rezoning at Rosser, Old Kildonan, bounded by Jefferson and CPR, Inkster Gardens Neighborhood, bounded by Jefferson Avenue, King Edward Street, and CNR Line, Waterford Green, under file DAS 15 of 2012. These are all in support.
David Pelubeski, and you are, sir?
My colleague Richard May from Lombard North Group.
Name and address for the record, please.
505 93 Lombard Avenue, Winnipeg, R3B3B1.
Just wanted to communicate before we open up with the applicant. The administration has indicated that they have some amendments to the administrative coordinated group report, which I've asked copies be made, and those will be coming up right away. And I'd like them to be brought forward so that the applicant has a copy.
I have, this is the suggestions from Donna Beaton.
She did send them to me later this afternoon. Oh, so you do have them before you? Okay, okay. So the amendments, they'll be coming up shortly. They'll be an exhibit to the file as well. I just wanted to make sure that the applicant had a copy of the amendments. Yes, and you want
to. You have 10 minutes to make your presentation, and then we'll take questions. Go longer if we need to.
I've got a big UGG because our presentation is two parts. The first presentation we'd like to make is on the precinct plan, and the second presentation on the DASZ. So
we'll do that later as a second
okay.
item.
I've asked my colleague Richard May to do the presentation, the precinct plan. I wanted to say that we appreciate the opportunity to work with the administration. We found the process very helpful. These past 10 months, we've been working on the precinct plan with the administration. We've engaged the community in a number of meetings, which Richard will explain. We're happy also that this is the first precinct plan that will be presented to the City of Winnipeg. And we commend the city in terms of your Plan Winnipeg document and Small Area Planning Initiative. We think it's an excellent approach in terms of resolving issues. Just to give you an example of this approach, we only have two suggested minor amendments that we would like to propose for the precinct plan. But before I get into that, I'd like Richard to give you an overview of the precinct plan.
Thank you, David. Well, just quickly take you through the community engagement process, and then we'll get into some of the precinct plan policies and recommendations. So how we got here, we over the course of the last few months, we've done four community open houses. And where we've engaged during those four open houses with approximately 800 people in total that have come out. And in addition to the open houses, we've done we've engaged people through social media as well, through our Facebook site. Open house one dealt with community preference survey and some of the planning considerations for the Waterford Green area. Open house two dealt with land use and design development. Open house three reviewed the land use and design options, and this open house, we made some modifications to the plan based on some of the recommendations from community residents. And then in open house four, we presented the final draft plan to the community residents. So the precinct plan, in terms of its land use policies, I just have here up a land use and transportation policy map that's at the back of the precinct plan document. We've got in terms of residential land uses, we have low-density residential, which includes single-family, semi-detached, and townhouses. And this is in yellow, and it comprises the vast majority of the precinct area. Medium-density residential, we have this includes RMF-M density. And these are primarily located at the entrance or the gateway to the community along Dr. Jose Rizal Way and Old Commonwealth Path, and at the intersection of Old Commonwealth Path, or the extension of Old Commonwealth Path, and where it meets up with King Edward Street. And this helps to provide a scaling down of densities so we don't have traffic infiltration into single-family neighborhoods. We also have a neighborhood mixed-use center, which is a small-scale local commercial, which also allows some residential uses in. It's approximately 3 acres in size, and it's located at the intersection of Dr. Jose Rizal Way and Old Commonwealth Path. And we also have a potential school reserve where that's located at the end of Jefferson Avenue as it makes its way towards King Edward, Jefferson Avenue will no longer intersect with King Edward Street and be redirected within the neighborhood, and that is where the location of the school is. Interconnected parks, paths, and...
Quick question. Acres for set aside for school?
There's an agreement between the school division and the developer that is in the final stages of completion to provide the school division 9.25 acres. Now, in saying that, you know, the school division, as you well know, in terms of being a former school trustee, still requires the approval of the public school finance board for funding the school, but that submission has been made to the board.
We also have interconnected parks, paths, and streets with sidewalks. And the parks, we have a combination of active play spaces, which are located at Jefferson Avenue and in between this Waterford Green neighborhood and the neighborhood to the south, which is Meadows West. And this is all interconnected through a linear park system. We've got two retention ponds that provide park space and pathway space that connects the two primary active recreational spaces. In terms of roadways, Dr. Hosey Rizal Way is a minor arterial and extends from Zogan to Cove, which is just the midway between Jefferson and Old Commonwealth Path. And that will extend to Chief Peguis Trail as it comes around 2016. Old Commonwealth Path, which is a collector street, extends through Waterford Green at its current location straight to King Edward Street. King Edward is a collector street and is anticipated to be upgraded from rural cross-section to an urban cross-section from Commercial Avenue to the extension of Commonwealth Path. And Jefferson Avenue, which is a collector to a local street, so this is what I was talking about in terms of the transition from a collector street, and then it's going to be directed internal to the precinct area. Sidewalk and provides access to the future school site. The AT network, the active transportation network, is comprised of an internal sidewalk and pathway system connecting the future school site, the residential areas, park spaces, and the neighborhood mixed-use center. The transportation master plan also identifies Dr. Jose Rizal Way as an addition to the city's AT network. And the AT network on Dr. Jose Rizal Way will separate vehicles and cyclists to help promote safety and usage of the AT network. We also have a boulevard street that will link in the neighborhood mixed use center, which is located at as I mentioned, at Dr. Jose Rizal Way and Old Commonwealth Path into the neighborhood and to the lake system and pathway system in the future school.
Richard. Sorry, can I just ask a question while you're on that?
Sure.
The slide before?
Yep.
It's item number two there, the active transportation path there. Yep. So there'll be the roadway, and there'll be a path for walking and for cyclists? So it'll be a wider than a sidewalk?
Yes. It's, I believe it's a 3-meter pathway for cyclists, and then there'll be a sidewalk, which I believe is 1.5.
So it's road, path for the cyclist, then sidewalk.
In terms of urban design guidelines that we wanted to incorporate in terms of the parks and pathways, we have two retention ponds in our in the precinct area, and we want to ensure that they're naturalized retention ponds. We heard from community residents that older types of retention ponds attracted geese, and we felt that in terms of sustainability, and this is... We also want to provide a mix of active play spaces and passive recreational opportunities, incorporate principles of CEPDED or crime prevention through environmental design and universal design to ensure that our parks and pathways are safe and inviting for all residents, and the creation of a view corridor linking the future school site to the neighborhood mixed-use center. In terms of urban design guidelines for the neighborhood mixed-use center, we want to ensure that it's pedestrian-focused, and that includes street furniture and landscaping, so it could be benches, it could be pedestrian-scale lighting. Parking will be located internally in the rear and side yards. So what we want to do is create that pedestrian environment along Dr. Jose Rizal Way. The design of buildings will minimize setbacks and promote pedestrian access from the street. The design of the neighborhood mixed-use center will celebrate its important location as a gateway into the community and preserve the view corridor, as I mentioned before, towards the lake and the school site. And we want to ensure that signage will be pedestrian-oriented and public art will be encouraged within the neighborhood mixed-use center area. Another important feature of design is we want to ensure that this is a welcoming front door to the community. In terms of Dr. Hilden Rising in particular, we want to create a pedestrian-friendly environment. What I mean by that is we want to ensure that the houses are front onto the street and don't turn their backs to the street. And this is response to the community concerns regarding the visual appearance of the community's front door. We heard through the open house that they don't want to back on the street. You create this canyon effect with a wall of fences down Dr. Hosey Rise Away. And that this was a better design option to, instead of backing onto it, you front onto it and create a This also realizes the objectives of the complete communities and also the transportation master plan. So in terms of the welcoming front door, we've got a few images up here. One is of what we want to create and what we don't want to create. So on the bottom, we don't want to create streets that have fences that back onto the street that over time wear down and visual appearance is compromised. Above, we have pedestrian streets that are active onto the street that promote pedestrian walkability and cyclists. I have an image of what we're proposing on the top right here, along Dr. Hosey Rise Away, where you've got the AT corridor and houses that front onto the street. Front yards to face Dr. Hosey Rise Away. Key Wayne, as I mentioned, and Dr. Hosey Rise Away is not a City of Winnipeg designated truck route and has not been designated as such under the City of Winnipeg Transportation Master Plan. The nature of the street, according to the Transportation Master Plan, is to primarily focus on pedestrians and cyclists. The city also, in that master plan, acknowledges that there should be a network expansion along Dr. Hosey Rise Away, and also for transit. And the Transportation Master Plan also identifies that Dr. Hosey Rise Away will be a direction of the Transportation Master Plan is the integration of transportation and land use planning that supports the direction of complete communities in terms of urban form and transportation choice. This slide here talks about traffic volumes on Dr. Jose Rizal Way. We did a traffic analysis, and that predicts that Dr. Jose Rizal Way connects to Chief Agus Trail, we predict 15,000 or approximately 15,000 vehicles per day on Dr. Jose Rizal Way north of Adsum. And this is similar to 2009 traffic volumes on other mixed-use streets that have commercial and residential on as well, such as Academy, which has 19,000, Ellis Avenue, which is 16, Sargent, etc. But it's also less than other streets such as St. Mary's Road between Fermor and Dakota, which has 30,000 cars per day, Grant Avenue, which has 24, and here I've got two pictures. One is the existing single-family homes on Grant Avenue on the bottom right, and you can see that the separation or the front setbacks are very minimal. It helps, but it does help to create a pedestrian-friendly environment. They don't back onto the street. On the top right, we've got new multifamily condos on Grant Avenue, and you can see here that we've got, it's a four-story multifamily condo. In the image, you'll see that there's the main living space is open and directly looks onto the sidewalk with very minimal buffering between the sidewalk, the roadway, and the main living space. My last slide looks at what our urban design look for front yards that face onto Dr. Hosey Rise Away. Reduce front yards to promote a pedestrian-focused environment, as I mentioned. Front yards will minimize sod and have high-quality, low-maintenance landscape. It will benefit the reduced front yard is that the creation of a family courtyard space between the house and the garage. And the garage will be set back from the lane to provide off-lane parking for visitors to Dr. Jose Rise Away. And will in the future, Dr. Jose Risaway in the future will restrict on-street parking. And so this is an important component to allowing visitors to come and have access to the
Thanks, Richard. Just before I outline the two suggested adjustments we have to the precinct plan, and we agree with the administration's refinements to the plan, subject to these two adjustments. But I wanted to mention one of the things that has come up at our public meetings is related to the future of Dr. Jose Risaway and the timing of four-laning the roadway. And what we've done is we've explained that it's a matter that has to be budgeted by the City Council. We've also explained that the members of this community committee have made the proposal to City Council to advance the timing of completion of works or timing of the start of the works for Chief Pegasus Trail from 2031 to 2016, and that we anticipate as part of that initiative and our development that the timing of the four-laning Dr. Jose Risaway may be coincidental in the next short period of time, subject to Council's approval, obviously, but with these developments happening, the time frame may be somewhat less. Right now, Jose Risaway and Keewatin Street are managed by stop signs, so it does back up traffic, and the traffic is such that that is becoming a concern to residents within the area. So we acknowledge that, and the administration has also said it. You know, it's a matter subject to Council approval and have reiterated the initiatives of this community committee. The two adjustments that we would like to make to the precinct plan are to amend the low-density residential urban design policies, which presently only reference townhouses. And we would like, this is policy C2.2, and I have provided a letter to the community committee dated September 11th, today's date, with several schedules. And I'm referring to schedule number two, developer schedule number two here. On page three, correct. So as Richard has said, we want to have Jose Risaway to be the front door to this development. We want this street to be a pedestrian-friendly street. We do not want to turn our backs on the street. So in addition to townhouses having reduced front yard setbacks, we also want to add two-family and townhouses two-family to the townhouse policies for the reduced front yard setbacks. I've laid out in here our suggested wording for
David,
inclusion.
David, are you referring to secondary suites?
No.
No.
These are side-by-side two-family dwellings, side-by-side dwellings. And if you maybe would go back to the just, this is the plan showing the townhouses and the side-by-side two-family dwellings. The side-by-side two-family dwellings are the yellow, dark yellow, and the townhouses are the brownish, lighter brown. So all of those two types front on Dr. Jose Risaway. So rather than having our townhouses set back 10 feet and our duplexes set back 20 feet under the zoning bylaw, we're suggesting as part of a new initiative that we were working on with the administration to bring a variance forward to have a 15-yard setback for both townhouses and duplexes or side-by-side two dwellings. So that's why we've added the two dwellings and townhouses to this policy and asked the committee's approval of that. The second aspect deals with parks policies under C6.1. Parks have asked that wording, in the event that the school is not approved or the school division doesn't build the school on the site, the land is zoned, and this is the area that's the large gray area, as proposed under the plan as single family. But the school division, the Parks Department have asked that in the redevelopment of that, if the school is not built, that approximately half the land that would be provided to the school division be dedicated as a active park for a sports field. What we've indicated that we would prefer to have, because we have given more than 8% dedication, and we've agreed to do a significant amount of improvements within that dedicated area beyond what was normally be required, we would like the wording to read, should a school site not be required or approved, the design of the neighborhood residential neighborhood underlying the potential school reserve will include provisions for the dedication of an active recreation area, taking into consideration the dedication requirements of the city's development agreement parameters. Basically, it would be a new application. We haven't filed an application for that area, so it would come back before the community committee. But we want the opportunity to assess what we have done and the design of the new area and have local community input into it before we commit to any specific size of a site. So we're asking for that flexibility, and the decision would be made by the community committee when we bring that plan forward, should the school division not proceed with the development of school. With regards to the school division, they can't, other than say that they've made the application to the Public School Finance Board for the funding of the school. It's under consideration. Until the board approves it, they can't confirm if they're going to be, the time and when, and if this is the location for the school site. But we've both agreed in terms of our discussions that this 9.25 acres would be set aside here.
Do you have a copy of that letter, David? By chance, the one that was sent to the finance board?
From the school division? Mm-hmm. School division representatives are here, but...
Okay. Thank you.
So what's the timeline in terms of whether or not the school division decides, though? Like, is there already enough student population there to build a school?
I'll defer to the school board representative.
They're going to come up in support of this application?
Well, you'll have a chance to speak later, sir.
Okay.
So.
If you need to speak later, I can speak.
Yeah. Okay.
There's an article in the paper today quoting members from the school division board, or school division, both Seven Oaks and Winnipeg One, about the need for school. And
so there's a discrepancy. Anyway, we won't go there.
Okay.
Can I ask?
Is there questions now, David? Are you done your presentation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I did have only one more question. My computer is broken down. I didn't get to read a lot of this stuff, but in terms of this development, there are this precinct plan. There's a number of other smaller streets where there'd be low-density residential, I assume, right?
Yes, all of the streets that are, all of the development to the south, Meadows West, is single-family.
Yeah, that is.
Part of our process was to discuss how the fit of the new area would relate to that. So all of the streets and adjoining areas within the proposed Waterford Green site are single-family. Multifamily sites are focused, as Richard said, on Jose Rizal Way and Old Commonwealth, and we do have side-by-sides that are on lanes south of the extension of Old Commonwealth, but still out of view and not on any street alignment. That connects onto.
I was just trying to come to my question, actually, and that is, I heard, I know the city. Anyway, my question is just simply this: any of the smaller streets, do they have sidewalks? Are you building?
Oh, in terms of our street,
in this precinct plan, is there any? Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
They have sidewalks. Right?
Yes.
So nobody's going to be walking on streets.
Well, there, in terms of small bays and cul-de-sacs, there's no sidewalks. But in terms of the...
Say a small bay. What's a small bay?
Do you have that?
Maybe in Seven Oaks Crossing, there's a Stoneham Place where there's seven or eight houses.
Yeah, exactly. Right? 7 to 10 houses.
But in the Maples, there are bays that go on and on and on, right?
Yeah. What we show here in the plan is locations where there would be sidewalks internally on residential streets. In other words, every collector street or every arterial street has sidewalks on both sides. And we have interconnecting sidewalks on north-south residential streets that provide sidewalk access throughout the development. They're on one side of the street because internal along the lake, there's also a sidewalk internally. So yes, we do on our normal, you know, standard residential streets include key streets for sidewalks for interconnectivity.
So the only places that wouldn't have sidewalks have 7 to 10 houses, stuff like that.
No, we have some bays where there's cul-de-sacs. We have a bay that is along the lake, two bays along the lake on the west side, but they have sidewalks in a public park that is adjoining those bays. So the sidewalks are more internal.
What I'm getting at is when you're coming out of your house and you're like on a small little place, it's, you don't really need sidewalks. But if you have for people who use wheelchairs or whatever that is, it's preferable to be on a sidewalk because you're low profile, right?
So that's right.
So I just want to make sure that, you know, like, sidewalks are not a big deal where you have 7 or 10 houses, but if you don't have an ability to come out of your house and access a sidewalk, instead you have to walk on the street, that's not a good thing. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Where in all of our interconnecting streets have sidewalks. Small bays, which are a small grouping of houses, we don't put sidewalks. And typically where those are, we have... we have parks that back onto those lots, so the likelihood of where people would choose to walk would be.
If you're going to work or something, you'd come out of the little bay and you'd come onto a sidewalk because you're providing sidewalks.
Yes.
David, I think we're going to deal with both items together, if that's okay, because a lot of the folks that have registered have registered for both.
Okay. Okay. All right. So that would be fine for us. Maybe before I ask Richard to go and do the presentation for the subdivision, we have provided under our developer schedule number one street names for Waterford Green, which we're asking the community committee to approve, as well as our theme statement. And just to give you a little bit of a background, we've used as part of our theme statement for the street names the landscape, the sky, the prairie, the water in southern Manitoba. This is what brought settlers here initially in the 18th and 19th century. This is what attracted them to Winnipeg. So we've used names that reflect that. Secondly, what we've also done in the last few decades, we know that this area of Winnipeg has attracted a lot of new immigrants as well. And so in recognizing that, we've also incorporated in terms of the culture, diversity, and the background of those immigrants in terms of including names that reflect that ethnicity and cultural groups as well. So our list of names is provided here, and we would like the community committee's approval of the list of names.
Those names already registered with the city?
We sent the list of names to the city back in July.
There is a procedure in dealing with street names.
There's a new procedure.
So we won't be able to approve that at this time.
My only concern is, because I did confront this before when I didn't have the street names approved at the community committee, couldn't register the plan until I had the street names come back and be approved. So as long as I'm not in a process like that, because I don't know what your new procedure is, I hate to admit it.
It's relatively new on us.
Can I speak? Yes, we did receive a list last July from the applicant. We had some concerns with the list and some questions about the theme and other information, which we didn't get sort of a firm response back, so we didn't put the names forward yet. As a matter of process, it would be appropriate for us to receive this list of names and to provide you with a report for the next meeting for them to be approved. So it'll be 1 month. You're still, you'll barely be through council by the time the street names will be approved. So
just for my purpose, we never received communication back from the administration, and the street names have been sent there over a month ago. So, you know, again, I'm a little concerned about process.
Baroque as well, so with the summer months.
But in terms of our meeting time and the date of this meeting, the commitment for this meeting was known in June.
Mr. Pelibeski, I don't appreciate that comment. I did reply, and we'll deal with the street names at the next meeting.
We have to make sure we follow the procedure.
This can go to council is October 24th, Dave. So this will be broken out, and we'll deal with it later.
I realize that, yeah.
Moving on.
Okay, I'm going to ask Richard to go through the DASZ application.
Just one moment. Glenn?
I'd like to say a few words, if I may, Councillor Sharma, regarding the precinct plan and the suggested changes.
Can I just ask a question before that, if we can go back to that slide with the active transportation? No, that it had three bullets, I believe. I asked a question on it previously.
About the width, there was the three. Yeah, there's three
keep
meter
going back.
Thing.
Right there. So the red dotted lines are the active transportation path, correct?
Dr. Jose Razzleway, yes. And as well as on King Edward Street here. And then.
Throwing it out there. It ends just prior to Jefferson, right? So technically, I mean, if someone's on a bike coming from your village center, they can go just short of Jefferson. Wouldn't it make sense to link it all the way to the Chief Peguis there?
It is linked up to Chief Peguis. Village Center, you could either take the AT corridor from Razzleway and Old Commonwealth North to Jefferson. You can take the
but it doesn't go to Jefferson there. It ends.
Well, maybe just to clarify, I think the administration is saying that we're providing internal active transportation corridors inside the development. The administration is saying, and the precinct plan is identifying that active transportation would also proceed from south of the development and along Jose Razzleway up to Chief Peguis Trail. So we have comments on what we see our responsibilities for active transportation internally, and what we see externally as being the city's responsibility, and that's one of my comments with regards to the AC.
So I was just thinking, like, could that piece be moved over up top? Because essentially then everyone in that part of your development could get to school and so on, easier if they were on a bike. Like just taking that portion and moving it up. We can talk about that later. But
the only thing with regards to that component of it is that connection of King Edward to Jose Razzleway is not part of the plan because of the curve in the connection of King Edward to Chief Peguis Trail is not part of the plan because of the curve in the alignment of Chief Peguis Trail, and that's also the same case with Jefferson Avenue no longer connecting when Chief Peguis Trail is developed. Again, we look at that active transportation corridor being external to our site, and our representation to the committee is that we'll be responsible for the internal active transportation corridors, not the external active transportation corridors. And I'll address that in my comments with regards to the ACG report.
Yeah, there's just a couple things. Councillor Eady, you were talking about the where would the low density be, single family dwellings? I just want you to be aware that most of the precinct is identified as yellow, which is low density, and low density residential includes single family dwellings, two family dwellings, single-family with secondary suites and townhouses. So townhouses are a form of multiple family. I just want you to be aware that it's not single-family only.
Yeah, no, I understand. I just was concerned about single families having sidewalks, right?
And
I heard there's going to be sidewalks all by the multifamily and the townhouse and so on, but I wasn't sure of. We built suburbs a while back without sidewalks, and they don't work. Windsor Park's a good place to talk about, or there are. Sounds like there's not going to have to be. Actually, Amber Trails is a good example where there's no sidewalks for. The newer stuff does have sidewalks.
Okay, could we go to the slide that shows the sidewalks? Thanks, Richard. I just want to point out that this. Slide is not consistent with the policy map in that the north-south street, the first one that is west of Dr. Jose Rizalway, it does not show a sidewalk all the way from Old Commonwealth to Jefferson. There's a gap at one point. And why is that?
Where's the proposed transportation going to be?
Where's the gap?
Where's
Go right. To the right.
Keep going. Right. Stop.
There.
Oh,
no.
Between there and
from there to
down
there.
Here?
Yeah.
Sorry. That's my bad with the color. It's yellow here, but it's actually supposed to be red.
The sidewalk
does actually.
I couldn't make it out.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I noticed that last minute and wasn't able to make the change.
No, that's okay. Dave, you made some suggestions for changes to the precinct plan, but you seem to be fine with the recommended changes to the policy map that's part of the precinct plan. Am I correct?
Yes. I think what you're getting at is in terms of the adding the...
I have copies of that.
Yeah, I'm not concerned with the policy map. The detailed policies say interpretation of the actual boundaries would be undertaken as part of the development approval and subdivision rezoning process.
Okay.
So, notwithstanding, we have some rather large blobs on here. I'm fine with that.
He's extending the AT path along here.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
We're okay with that.
Okay. So you see that it shows an underlying designation as for a park. Should the school site not proceed as a school site? And it's meant to be conceptual, not taken as a literal area that it shows. And then the extension of the AT paths north along King Edward to Chief Peguis and north along Dr. Jose Rizalway to Chief Peguis. And then some minor tweaks to make sure the paths and sidewalks have continuity.
Yeah, we're fine.
You're fine with that?
Yep.
Okay, great. We have some concerns with the proposed changes that you have suggested. Your proposed change to our proposed change. We propose to change.
Clear to me, okay. This is a test for the committee.
C6.1 parks policies. Well, let's start with that one.
Okay.
Is that one? Is that in Dave's document?
They don't want to set aside a specific acreage.
Yeah. Can you be specific about the page?
Yes. Page 3. Section C, 6.1, Parks Policies of the Schedule 2. At the bottom, should a school site not be required or approved, and so on, will include provisions for the dedication of an active recreation area. Active recreation is defined in the plan as a sports field. So to say, taking into consideration the development agreement parameters is perhaps may be a contradiction to an active recreation area. Don't know what the number of acres would come out under the development agreement parameters. So we suggest you simply strike out taking into consideration and right to the end of the sentence and replace it with of a size and configuration to accommodate at least one full-size sports field. Perhaps Donna could elaborate on that?
I don't know if you can hear me. Typically, we're talking soccer or baseball, which if you're looking
bigger
at...
Bigger is soccer, right?
Bigger, a little bit. Actually, no, baseball if you're...
Baseball's the biggest?
They're pretty close when you take into account buffers and additional space. You're looking typically around 2.25 to 2.5, depending on how it's configured and where it's located. But that's at least, and there you want some adjacent space and walkways and stuff. So that's an approximate.
Lots of immigrants moving there. Soccer's a big thing.
And we can have the conversations now, but we'll be reserving any decision. We do have to hear from everyone in the gallery still.
Okay. And I just have one more.
You can certainly put it out there. We won't be making any decision right now.
Thank you. May I just make one more point? It's the proposed amendment on the same page, the same schedule, under C2.2. I just want the committee to be aware that this an amendment such as this indicates that not only townhouses, but two-family dwellings could be closer to the front property line than is typical because of the phrase front yard setbacks, which you will find when we move on to the DASZ and the ACG report. And the zoning agreement is in contradiction with some of those recommendations, one of which is that the front yard setback for single and two-family dwellings fronting and or backing onto Dr. Jose Rizal Way is 16 meters. And that's certainly not a reduced front yard setback. I just want you to be aware. The anything under the DASZ has to comply with the precinct plan. Because this, if it does proceed, will become council policy. They're not asking for a quantity, which is something typical of a policy document. We don't go there unless we absolutely have to. They're asking for reduced front yard setbacks to provide a more pedestrian scale streetscape and create more usable rear yards. And the zoning bylaw in R2, is it 15 feet or 20?
20 feet setback.
20-foot setback. So I think it's reasonable to conclude that's the normative number to go with. So they're looking at something less than 20 feet. 20 feet is 6 meters. 6 meters already is much less than the 16-meter recommendation that came from Public Works. And a reduced front yard could even be much smaller than 6 meters.
What are you recommending? That we proceed with caution on that wording, or you're striking it?
What is it on the townhouses again?
I think before I make a recommendation on behalf of urban planning, it would be wise that we hear from Public Works.
To answer your question, Councillor Eaney, townhouse setback would be 10 feet. Because it has a rear lane. And what our proposal will be to bring to the community committee is a consistent 15-foot setback along Dr. Jose Rizal Way for the townhouses and the R2 lots. So there's some consistency in it, and we can design that street, as Richard has said, as one of our front doors into this neighborhood.
On the dedication piece, I can...
Yes. Thank you.
Regarding dedication, just for clarity, C61 parks policy. Or is that the one that talked about dedicated? Yes, should a school site not be required? And part about dedication, the way it will actually work, it would be good for the the expectation is for that land, if there's one large playing field or something to be identified in the precinct plan, so that if an application comes in the future for that land, the development application comes, that the requirement is consistent coming forward. And the way the dedication calculation would be handled is there would again be an ACG report, which would be done as an addendum to this, the ASZ application, because it forms part of the planned area. So the previous dedication under or over dedication calculation would be taken into consideration with determining the dedication for the balance of the site.
I understand you correctly. You're saying that if this doesn't become a school and the developer wants to develop it, dedication unto itself within that particular parcel will be considered on its own merit?
It'll be considered as part of the overall application, considering what they've previously done dedication-wise.
Oh, because
there will be an addendum to it. Just for your clarification.
And I guess all that we're saying is that we have exceeded the 8% dedication. We've told the administration if the school isn't there, our original design didn't have the school there, that we would include a park space at that location. But, we don't want to, and that's why we've suggested, we would be dedicating an active recreation area, but want to take into consideration our dedication requirements. We may, I'm not saying, we will include a park space, but I just didn't want any specific wording down on it because it's part of a design process that the neighborhood's going to be involved with. We'll have there'll be new members of the neighborhood there. We'll do a design. We'll have meetings with the neighborhood as we had here before, and it comes to the community committee for review and approval. And so that's why we didn't want to have a number tied down to it.
Right. So given how did you feel about Mr. Doney's suggestion?
Well,
not specifying a certain acreage, but
the size and configuration to accommodate an active recreation field. And yes. And then, we can define what that field is going to be. But, not defining a soccer field, it could be.
You're okay with his suggestion?
Yeah, but,
The wording was full-size sports field. Yeah.
Maybe I could provide just a little bit more context, too. When we were reviewing the development or the precinct plan, we were quite adamant about having more active space in that community because there's so many areas around nearby that just have retention ponds with no active space immediately around it. Because the school was going for such a large size and they were accommodating two of the sports fields, we were willing to allow a slightly downsized active space within the precinct. But with the understanding that if the school didn't go in, we still wanted to at least provide some active amenities and green space to sort of in that quadrant. And, I mean, the developer has been very receptive to all our changes and all our recommendations, so we've been quite happy about that. We just wanted to be sure that we're not saying that it'll be developed necessarily as a full size, but once you go smaller than full size, you can't get it back. And so if at that time, I would think that if for some reason the community came back and there was backlash because they didn't want a full-size sports field, for whatever reason, that's something that would be worth going back and amending. But at least it provides for the worst-case scenario. So that was our rationale for requesting that.
But a full-size thing is not meant, you don't know that it's 5 acres, right? I think the plan, what you're amending is 5 acres, right? Doesn't it? Is that
the original wording said approximately half of the site, and they requested a revision. Yeah, they requested a revision. We countered that revision with another revision saying that, okay, we can accept that it doesn't have to be approximately half, but instead of being specific on size, we just want to be able to accommodate at least one full-size field.
Dave, what exactly will be in the green spaces shown there?
on the slide. Play structure.
Back to the maps on the green spaces or the plan.
So we have basically five types of green spaces. Green space A at the boundary between Meadows West to the south and the new development will include a soccer field. Green space A is about
also a soccer field? Sorry.
Is about 4.5 acres, sir.
So is that for organized soccer?
Yes. Well, there'll be parking on the either on the street facing it, or we haven't provided any parking off the site. We are aware that this area of the city probably needs a community center, but we feel that that kind of an initiative, that large of a nature of a site, as part of the process when we went through. We think the area on the west side of King Edward is an appropriate location because that area is designated as industrial. And the residents on King Edward who participated in our precinct planning process were concerned about truck traffic and concerned about industrial access coming out onto the street. So we suggested part of that process, and the school division has land there for a potential high school, that maybe that would be one of the considerations the city gives to a community center, an integrated community center that does provide sports fields and facilities that serve a large area. Residents that have been part of this process have valued the idea of having passive parks and walking through the area. We provided one active park to the south. D is an active park, but it's an unorganized field. In other words, you can go and kids can play soccer, you can have ultimate frisbee, you can have somebody chipping their golf balls, running their dogs, whatever the case may be in that field. And it's approximately 3 acres. B is a major entrance to the lake park. C is a formal kind of overlook park, overlooking the lakes, looking straight north from Commonwealth Avenue, and E, which is along the Chepeguas Trail area. It's a buffer area, and it again would be sort of a, I think it's mislabeled here. You've got, sorry, E is the tot lot. Yeah, E is the tot lot, which we worked out in terms of its location with the administration, and it's associated with and connected to the Chepeguas Trail walkways, which interconnect through the entire development and down into Meadows West.
So if you took soccer out of the equation,
well, A is the active green space in terms of the soccer pitch. D is an unorganized active. Right. Well, I think in terms of E, I mean, we'll have a play structure at the north. There'll be a play structure integrated with the B park, which is accessing the site. We initially had play structures and small tot lots associated with the townhouses and higher density area, but the administration preferred to have those eliminated and consolidated in two locations, which would be B and E in terms of having play structures, one in the north end and one in the south end. There would be a play structure integrated with B.
I think we'd also anticipated there could be one at A, and then we also anticipated if the school went in, there'd be one at the school. So we're trying to cover off all kind of four quadrants.
This is K to 8, N to 8.
My recollection is the smaller A wouldn't accommodate a full size. It only accommodated a three-quarter size.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Three-quarter size soccer?
So you can't have organized soccer there.
Not at that existing site, but the school site proposes athletic fields.
Yeah, so
the parking issues wouldn't be there then.
Exactly, yeah.
So then a play structure would make sense because
There are some organized nine-a-side or three-quarter size game. That's kind of 11-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, there's mini, and then there's what they call nine-a-side, which is kind of a junior age in between full size. So, but it's a little less intense. You don't get the adults playing it. So,
we've done detailed design for each one of these spaces, and our landscape architect Chris Nelson has indicated that that has the dimensions and size that would accommodate a full size soccer field.
Big is the park. What is the space there, the footprint?
Beg your pardon?
What is the footprint of E? Do you know?
In terms of the area? We have the information. I don't know exactly what it is. It's an acre plus in size. Would you like us to move on to the subdivision development application? Would you like us to move on to the subdivision development application? I'll ask Richard then to do sort of an overview.
Thanks, David. So the DSS application implements the precinct plan vision. It doesn't include all of the lands within the precinct area, I would like to highlight. There is the future school site lands that is going to be at a later point. There's also a triangle piece of land, I believe is around 4 acres, at the end of Jefferson Avenue by the Chief Peguis Trail extension. And that is where a current house residents who used to own the entire precinct area.
North of Jefferson.
As well as there's a triangle piece of land at the intersection of King Edward Street and Jefferson Avenue, and that is owned, that's about 4 acres as well, and owned by another party. And there's also part of the cutoff or the CPR former rail right away, which is adjacent to that triangle piece as well. That's not a part of this. Excuse me. The choice of housing types, we're going to provide a choice of housing types to satisfy community, life cycle, cultural, and budget needs. As we mentioned, it'll be single family, two family, townhouses, multifamily, medium. So there's going to be a wide range of housing choices. High quality green spaces connected to activity areas. We've provided residential clusters and street systems designed to connect residents together and create a shared sense of community. We've also provided accessible pedestrian cycling and transit-oriented mixed-use residential neighborhood that provides a variety of mobility choices for residents. These are the active and passive park spaces. We've kind of already touched upon that, but I just want to highlight that we're providing 14.4 acres of park space, which is approximately 8.8% of the area, and that doesn't include the park buffer along the future. And under the city development agreement parameters of 8%, that would be about 13 acres of park space, which is about 1.4 acres over that. We intend on going above the development agreement parameters of just sodding and providing actually quality program park space, as they've mentioned. And here are the active and park spaces, which we've already talked about, so I'll just move on. This is the next slide here has the future school site and single family homes. So a future 9.25 acre nursery to grade 8 school site is designated, as was mentioned, at the end of Jefferson Avenue. It's located on the south side of the end of Jefferson Avenue. The school site will be integrated into the sidewalk and pathway network, and the remaining 6.15 acres will be single-family. This is the sidewalks, paths, and park space slide. We've already kind of discussed this, so I won't belabor the point, but I would like to say that community pathways and sidewalks will connect residents to community park spaces, school grounds, and the village center. This slide here shows the zoning by residential type. We've got single family R1M, and that's a lighter peach color, and those are primarily located along on both sides of the two retention ponds that are located between Jefferson and Old Commonwealth Path. We've got R1S, and that's the yellow, and that's the vast majority of the rest of the development. We've got semi-detached or two-family R2 designation, and we've got those at various locations within the development. As Dave and I talked about previously, along Dr. Jose Rizal Way, on the north and south side of Jefferson Avenue. Also on the northeast part of the development, northeast of Dr. Jose Rizal Way and Jefferson, along the CPR. Back to the west by King Edward Street by the future school site, and also south of Old Commonwealth Path towards King Edward Street along a our townhouses. As I mentioned, we like to have these as part of the gateway or future housing density units along right-of-ways, so along Dr. Jose Rizal Way. We've got them located along our collector streets that go into our neighborhood off of Dr. Jose Rizal Way and Old Commonwealth Path. We have them there as well. And we've got five multifamily medium sites designated, and two of those are located by the Neighborhood Mixed Use Center just to the north, and along Old Commonwealth Path just to the west of the Neighborhood Mixed Use Center. And finally, one multifamily medium site at the Old Commonwealth Path and King Edward Street as you approach, as you enter the neighborhood from the west. In terms of the townhouses and the characteristics, as I mentioned, townhouses are located along collector streets or entry gateways, and townhouse design focuses on the creation of active streetscapes and provides rear courtyards. Townhouses will have articulation and facades, different roof pitches, and various materials to provide uniqueness in design. In terms of the design features with the townhouses, all the townhouses will have back lanes and reduced front yards to promote a pedestrian-focused environment. The front yards will have a high-quality, low-maintenance landscaping. The courtyard space between the residence and the garage will be provided for patio or deck space, and that's the reduced front yard allows for and the that. Patio space and courtyard behind the house, and that's going to be located between the house and the garage. And the garage will be set back from the lane to provide off-lane parking for visitors. Multifamily medium residential characteristics. We've got five sites, as I mentioned. They are approximately 8 acres in size. The multifamily lots are located along collector streets or at entry gateways. And setbacks and a stepping down of heights towards single-family residential areas will be so that we can minimize the shadow impacts, the potential shadow impacts on adjacent single-family houses. We'll also encourage architecturally innovative building design that positively contributes to the neighborhood. Multifamily will range between 3 to a maximum of 6 stories, and MHRC has the option to purchase up to 3 acres of land for multifamily housing. And if they do, MHRC has said that they would propose to construct market and non-market rental cooperative or life lease housing targeted to seniors 55 and plus.
Maybe just regard to that, MHRC has advised me that that they will be taking their option to acquire the two sites for multifamily. They'll be located, the two sites, on the south side of Commonwealth Avenue.
We also have a commercial town center, or as it's zoned neighborhood mixed use. We're calling this our village center. This is our concept plan. It shows its intersection with Dr. Jose Rizal Way and Old Commonwealth Path. Here you can see that we've got a pedestrian-focused environment with very minimal setbacks along Dr. Jose Rizal Way and along Old Commonwealth Path. And a little bit harder to see here, but along the collector road that encircles the neighborhood mixed-use center. We've located the parking internally. And we've also kept the visual view corridor from the intersection of Old Commonwealth Path and Dr. Jose Razzleway. It extends through the site, down the Boulevard Street, and towards the lake, and ultimately to the school site. And this is an important feature of providing that connectivity between the residential areas and the neighborhood mixed-use center, so people can walk to the neighborhood mixed-use center and have go for a restaurant, go for a drink on the patio, or go for dinner, or an ice cream. Some of the design features, as I mentioned, we're having active street frontages, so storefronts will be oriented to the street, and extended building setbacks will only be permitted where it is to incorporate a seating space or a patio. The intent is for the commercial signage to be pedestrian in scale and not oriented towards vehicles. And here we've got some examples of some of the concepts that we have. Transit-oriented and public spaces, we feel as though this will be an important component to the design of the town center. We want to ensure that because this Dr. Jose Razzleway is intended to be a high transit quality corridor in the transportation master plan, we want the design of the commercial town center to integrate public transit and cyclists to facilitate access and connectivity along Dr. Jose Razzleway. The design of the town center will include trees, landscaping, pedestrian scale lighting, and places for people to sit and to gather. And here we have some images of some concepts that we're looking to incorporate in the town center. As I mentioned, we are also incorporating a view corridor, and that extends through the site from Dr. Jose Razzleway and Old Commonwealth through the town center to the site. We're also going to want to integrate the neighborhood into the site by providing strong pedestrian access. We want to internalize parking to the site to provide that high-quality urban streetscape kind of feel and look. We want this to really be a pedestrian-focused kind of environment, and by doing that, we want to internalize. Ultimately, of the design is to integrate the surrounding neighborhood to the town center by creating a street that is pedestrian friendly. I want to finish off the presentation with just a brief summary. So, the mixed use neighborhood that we're proposing provides approximately 1,100 new housing units comprised of single family, semi detached, townhouse. We'll have a 3-acre village center with providing retail services, providing also the opportunity to have public art space within that space as well. We have a naturalized two-lake retention system. We have active play spaces, including multi-purpose sports field and children playgrounds. We have community pathways and sidewalks connecting residents to community park spaces, school grounds, and the village center. Lastly, the economic impact of water for green contributes to the city net tax revenues in approximately $49 million. Part of the attached appendix that was provided as part of this application.
I'm not certain if there's any questions on Richard's presentation. I provide you an opportunity. And
in the middle of the parkade or the parking lot, what is the semicircle?
That's basically illustrative of. We have
two components here.
We have had discussions with community representatives about public art, and we've indicated our agreement to provide space either at the intersection of Old Commonwealth and Dr. Jose Razzleway, or providing it an internal area inside the parking area to help us break up the parking area and create a green space within that location. So it's just illustrative of our commitment to try and provide this visual corridor. Now, as we move towards the development of this commercial space and have more input in terms of stakeholders, we'll be able to refine this design. And we do agree, and it's important to us both for the multifamily as well as the town center that this be subject to site plan approval by the community committee and the director of planning, property, and development. So, you know, that's a process by which anything that happens within the multifamily medium density and the town center will be brought back to the community committee for review and approval.
You're saying that it's 8.4 dedication?
Yes.
Called Waterford Green, I guess, right? Anyway, I like the name of the neighborhood, sorry.
Appreciate that.
So I expect, but if you're going to call for Waterford Green, there should be lots of green.
There is.
Any further questions? We'll ask you to stand down now, and we'll be calling others.
We have more representations on the ACG report and the planning report.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Because this is such a large application, I appreciate it if you could give us the time. Developer Schedule 3 is an excerpt from a report that I provided to city planning in regards to the explanation for the reduced front yards for townhouses and side-by-side housing fronting Dr. Jose Reisel Way. I'm just going to go to the second page of the report because I want to have you understand the context. This is very important from our perspective, from a design and from a streetscape, to have a consistent front yard on Dr. Jose Reisel Way. So in regards to the building setbacks for R2,
where are you exactly?
I'm sorry, page 5 in our report under Developer Schedule 3.
Okay. Thank you.
As designed, the boulevard width for Dr. Jose Reisel Way varies from the south to the north, 22.4 feet between the curb's edge and the property line in the south, and 26.6 feet in the north. And this excludes the wideouts for the turning lanes at Chief Pegwas Trail and at Jefferson Avenue. So presently we have the front yard setback 24 to 26 feet to the edge of the street. The requirement that R2 be set back 16 meters, our front yards be set 16 meters from the street, basically adds a setback in between these areas of between 67 and 71 feet from the edge of the street. When we look up Dr. Jose Reisel Way, we have basically active street frontage in our commercial center. We have potentially 10-foot front yard for our multifamily medium and multifamily small. We're suggesting that be 15. We want a consistent 15-foot setback from the south end of Dr. Jose Reisel Way of our property at Adsum and Old Commonwealth to the northern portion of the site where our multifamily duplex ends, which is a street yet to be approved until we get a street name accepted by the administration. So we want to have a consistent setback. We'll be moving basically from commercial buildings on the street fronting on the sidewalk to a setback within this area of 15 feet continuous here, and 15 feet continuous. It's important, I think, from a design point of view. It's consistent with the new complete community strategy, which basically talks about establishing new streetscapes which are active, that have, if we're putting bus on there, if we're putting on sidewalks, if you're incorporating active transportation pathways, why set the houses back? So far, 67 to 71 feet. So we are not asking at this meeting for the 15-foot setback, because we know that's a variance application we'll have to come with later. That's why we ask for the adjustment in the precinct plan to add R2s to the townhouse component that would include a reduced front yard. We've been asked about sound attenuation, and Richard has given you examples of other active mixed-use streets that have residential immediately adjacent to the streets, within 5 feet of the streets. We have side yards here that would be 4 feet from the street. So
That is why we're suggesting that a separation, front yard separation of 15 feet makes sense from a design point of view and will improve the quality of this community. We do not want to turn our backs on the street. We want to make it a front door introduction to our project. When we talk to the developers, or builders, sorry, in terms of who are interested in the townhouses and duplexes, they've indicated that they would like to see the 15-foot front yard. They say that it creates the orientation for the house, that we can have an extended rear yard that we can create a courtyard in, and more importantly, because parking is going to be restricted in Dr. Jose Reisel Way in the future. In other words, when it's a four-lane street, no parking on the street. We do not want to have our back lanes choked with cars because there's no space to park. So what we've proposed is that they're related to this. There's a special rear yard setback of 18 feet that permits a driveway, so any visitors to your house can go in the driveway, park in the driveway, and we don't have a lane that's congested with cars. We think it makes for a better development. We think it's consistent with our complete communities, and there is no policy in the city of Winnipeg in either our Winnipeg as a plan or the transportation plan that supports the administration's request for a 16-meter setback on this street. So that's a preamble to my developer Schedule 4, which addresses, which is page 6, which addresses our suggested adjustments to the public service recommendations in Appendix A and Appendix A, and that's report number 2. So this is report item number 2. And what I'll do is, you'll see in our report, I referenced the pages in the city's administration's report. And I'm sorry if I'm going to go through a little bit of detail here. We have a number of things. Mostly they're for clarification as opposed to adjustment. A lot of times in the administration's report, it's subject to the director's determination. But we want to have more predictability in terms of what that expectation is and to clarify it. So that's why we're asking for these clarifications. So Clause 2A, double I, which is page 2 and it's also in page 8, this provides for the special rear yard setback requested by the developer. This is where we've asked for a special rear yard setback that the administration has agreed with and suggests that we include in a zoning agreement to provide a rear yard setback for the for lots that front onto Jose Reisel Way that are designated R2 of 18 feet as a rear yard. That is tied to the understanding that we will have a reduced front yard of 15 feet. So as that is not determined yet, we would like to request that this clause 2A2 of the public service report be deleted. So that there would be no special rear yard setback of 18 feet. Our proposal, and when we discussed this with the administration under our planning department under our Winnipeg, we talked about doing this as a blanket variance, which we have done in other cities. But initially when we talked to the zoning examiner at the city, it was suggested we have to submit individual house plans and get individual variances. But the administration, the planners, feel that our approach in terms of a blanket variance makes sense. And so we would, following the public hearing approval, should the plan be approved, then make an application for a blanket variance to reduce the front yard for the R2 sites to 20 feet from 20 feet to 15 feet, and at the same time look as a condition of approval to provide an 18-foot rear yard setback for accessory buildings, and we would agree to that. So we're asking that clause 2A II of the public service recommendation be deleted as it is presented in the report. In terms of clause 2A IIIB, which is page 2 and 8, this is just a clarification. We've met with the planners. I think we're all of the understanding. This is regarding to the commercial mixed-use site, the Village Center, where is that should be no parking in any required voluntary yard. So a voluntary, a required yard is a certain setback. If we have a greater setback, it's a voluntary yard. So the administration is saying there shouldn't be any parking that. We just want it clarified to say that it be amended by adding the phrase with the understanding that the CMU parking is to be contained in the interior rear and side yards formed by creating an active street frontage where the buildings are oriented around the street perimeter of the CMU site. So it just clarifies this. We don't want to get into an interpretation problem later on. We have done a design. The design is available to the administration, and I think it's something that they support. Clause 2A VI, this is page 2 and page 8 of the administration's report, proposes the 16-meter setback to principal dwellings backing onto Dr. Jose Riza Way. And there's a similar clause in Clause 12 of Appendix B of the ACG report. And I think as we understand this, it's just not backing onto it. It's also fronting on it. We have no houses that back onto Jose Riza Way. They all front on it. So,
no, we do actually have some houses to move up the cul-de-sacs.
Well, that's up north.
Yeah.
Those are side yards, not...
Those are rear yards, yes.
Are they rear yards?
Okay. Yes. And are we okay with those? Okay, so we want to remove the 16 meters in terms of setbacks so that we would, you know, the normal yards and apply for a rear yard, which is 25 feet for the single family to the north end of the site, and for the balance of the site, which is front yards, again, we do not want this clause to be included as a requirement because it will materially affect the design and the quality of the neighborhood we're designing. As I said earlier, Dr. Jose Reisel is not a high-speed roadway. It's not designated as a truck route north of Inkster Boulevard. There's no provisions in the city's development plan policies under our Winnipeg Complete Communities or the city's transportation plan that requires this setback on Dr. Jose Reisel Way. 60-meter setback for rear and front yards on Dr. Jose Risaway is impractical given the side yard setbacks permitted under the zoning bylaw for R1 and R2 are 4 feet, and multifamily front yards that are fronting onto Dr. Jose Risaway are 10 feet, all of which are significantly less than the 16-meter setback that is proposed just for the R2 site and the R1 site. That is an important consideration from our project's design. My clause 4, which is item 2, clause 2A, sub V, double I, page 2 and page 8. It's similar to the ACG report, clause 13 of Appendix B, which are lots backing on Chief Peguis Trail, rear yard to provide a minimum depth to achieve city's motor vehicle noise policy guidelines. What we have asked for interpretation of this clause is to have these guidelines specified in terms of a design proposal. We've asked that Stantec Engineering provide us a design proposal that complies with this, and we would like to add the wording that request clause 13 be reworded to state the setback of a principal dwelling to Chief Peguis Trail right-of-way to be a minimum of 18.82 meters to be composed of a 7.62-meter rear yard and 11.2-meter park buffer. Grading of the rear yard to be sloped up to the southern boundary of the park buffer to create a berm with a maximum elevation of minimum elevation of 1.25 meters in height above grade at the rear of the house, and the construction on top of the berm of a 2-meter uniform solid cedar-tone fence to be maintained by the property owner. The above provision addresses our concern with regards to three lots, which are located at the apex of the cul-de-sac, two cul-de-sacs at the north end, and the turning cul-de-sac on the east end of the site. We initially had these two cul-de-sacs intersect Dr. Jose Riza Way, but because of separation distance to Chief Peguis Trail for those intersections, we were asked by transportation to move that intersection down. So that created this bulb out and reduced those rear yards to 30.6 feet. All of the other rear yards onto Chief Peguis Trail
are 42.8 feet. So this recommendation, wording by Stantec Engineering, would address the concerns in terms of ensuring that those three or so lots do not become unbuildable lots by complying with the recommendations in terms of sound attenuation. Our point number five, which is Appendix A, recommendation, which is page 25 of the report, it says the size and location of the subject property can accommodate proposed development. And I think it's just a typo at Main Street. It should be read as Dr. Jose, because of its relationship to Dr. Jose Risleway and Commonwealth Avenue. So just a small typo. Going on then to our last schedule, which is Developer Schedule 5, which deals with the ACG report on the plan considerations and agreement considerations. To a large part, our suggestions are related to clarifications. This is under Part C, Agreement Conditions. Clause 10, page 30, and Clause 44, page 35, provide for the city to recover the share of street and underground services constructed in Dr. Jose Risleway by others. There's another development that was approved here in the past, Dr. Jose Risleway. Two lanes have been built up to this street here, and as we develop ours, we will be continuing this street and developing this area. So it's a matter that we do appreciate that we have an obligation for half the street and sharing the water line services that are installed in this street. But as we extend this street north, again, this benefits the developer by including we're saying, in essence, for all of those things that administration's identified that we must do, that we get a credit for completing the works against what we would potentially have to pay to the administration, which would then be reimbursed to the other developer, so that there's a fair responsibility in terms of our side of the street paying for half the improvements, the other side of the street paying half the improvements. So much of what I'm going to be saying now just is related to that. And Kim and I had an opportunity to discuss this earlier today, and I think there's general accord in this. So there's a number of clauses that relate to these responsibilities my clients will be taking on, which we think should be offset as a consequence of the work that we'd be doing, and these are related to clauses 33, 37, 38, 39, 40, and 45. So I'll be dealing with each of these clauses as I go through. Clause 12, page 30. Again, this is the second time it comes in the report, requiring the 16-meter setback on the principal dwellings to Dr. Jose Risleway. We ask that this recommendation be deleted, and I've explained why in terms of its deletions in the planner's report. We would also like it deleted from the ACG report. Clause 13, page 30, lots backing onto Chief Peguis Trail rear yard. Again, I've addressed this in the planner's report, and you know, we'd like the same clarification in the ACG report in terms of sound attenuation and setbacks in the ACG report as recommended by Stantec Engineering. Clause 22, Chief Peguis Trail works. The Clause 22 requires the developer to take responsibility for intersection and channelization improvements on Chief Peguis Trail. The city has not required any developer joining Chief Peguis Trail to take on these responsibilities. Chief Peguis Trail is a limited access major city expressway serving the entire city, and the intersections that are approved benefit the city as a whole, and as such, the improvements should be funded by the city as a whole, and we request Clause 22 be deleted. In terms of Clause 31, page 33, King Edward Street improvements, the precinct plan background transportation study suggests that King Edward Street would not connect to Chief Peguis Trail, and the need for the street extension north of the proposed intersection with Commonwealth is questionable. We request that Clause 31 be amended to state the developer's responsibility should be limited to the cost of contributing to the extension of King Edward from Commercial Avenue to the proposed connection with Commonwealth Avenue. So that is basically, if Richard, you want to show the location, Commercial Avenue to the south, to the extension of Commonwealth Avenue there. Clause 33, which is page 33 of the administration's report, Jefferson Avenue pavement. It's just a typo in terms of 2,000 millimeters of thickness of pavement. It should be 200 millimeters. And not that I'm thinking that Kim's trying to slip something in on me.
It's a runway.
The only thing that we're pointing out here is that the developer to the south side hasn't made any contribution towards pavement in Jefferson Avenue. If we build the pavement in Jefferson Avenue, it should be credited as a it should be applied as a credit towards the shared costs of works. Similarly, the CPR rail line crossing improvements. If there's crossing improvements in terms of the rail line. Here, again, the developer to the south hasn't made a contribution to that. It benefits both developments, and we're suggesting that the paving costs, that this clause be amended to insert a portion of the Jefferson Avenue paving costs should be allocated and credit towards the recoveries due to the developer under Clause 10 in Part C. Clause 35, page 33, full cost of Jefferson Avenue and Dr. Jose Reisel Way traffic lights. We request Clause 35 be amended to change the full cost of traffic signals at Jefferson Avenue and Dr. Jose Reisel Way to read not more than 75% of the cost of the traffic signals at Jefferson and Dr. Jose Reisel Way, which is reflective of the three out of four corners that our clients own are included in the development area. This is consistent with Clause 34, which we don't have a problem with the administration's report, where 25% of the traffic control are allocated to develop reflective of having one of four corners on Adson Street. So we're just saying to be consistent, we have three corners on the north portion, we'll pay 75%, and we have one corner on the south portion. There's two other developers south of us, MHRC and the developer to the east that... we're only being required to pay 25% there. In terms of Clause 36, pages 33 and 34, we've been asked to pay 25% of the cost of traffic controls, et cetera, on Chief Peguis Trail. Again, Chief Peguis Trail is a limited access city expressway serving the entire city. The intersections related traffic controls benefit the city as a whole, and as such, the improvements should be funded by the city as a whole. This is not a cost allocated to other developers adjoining Chief Peguis Trail. And similarly, similar to Clause 22, we request Clause 36 be deleted. Clause 37, page 34, full cost of automatic railway crossing at CPR rail line with Jefferson Avenue. Again, if these costs are required, we will pay 75% of it. 25% should be reflected as a portion to the developer to the south. If we end up paying the 100%, it should be a credit towards recoveries that the city would otherwise have to be provided to the developer to the south, which is on the south side of Jefferson, east side of Dr. Jose Reisel Way, opposite to us, who wasn't required to extend the street through and connect Jefferson Avenue to Dr. Jose Reisel. Clause 38, page 34, southbound and northbound lane, left-hand turns lanes, et cetera, Dr. Jose Reisel Way and Jefferson. Again, responsibility for cost to reflect the location of the development lands around the intersection. Our clients would be responsible for 75% of the cost. The adjoining developer on the south of Jefferson would be, and east side of Dr. Jose Reisel would be responsible for 25%. So similar situation, if we have these turning lanes, we'll be responsible for 75%. So we request that Clause 38 be amended to state the developer shall not pay to the city cash on demand, shall pay to the city cash on demand, not more than 75% of the cost of constructing the Portland cement pavement, southbound and northbound left turn, storage lanes, upstream transitions, medians openings on Dr. Jose Reisel Way at Jefferson Avenue as determined by the Director of Public Works. So we just wanted to confirm our obligation is part of the obligation, not 100% of the obligation, and that Clause 40, page 34, complete works on Dr. Jose Rizal Way. We agree in part to works requested, accepting thereout the responsibility for constructing the east sidewalk and east boulevard street lighting and east boulevard landscaping. So, in essence, in terms of the request is to complete the east boulevard sidewalks and landscaping along here, as well as street lights. We'll be responsible for our side of the street. If we complete these works here, in terms of this interconnection, we understand that. But then again, it would be a credit back to what the developer on the southeast side of Jefferson and Dr. Jose Rizal Way should be expecting to be provided by our client. So we request that Clause 40 should be amended to remove the responsibility for the east sidewalk, east boulevard street lighting, east boulevard landscaping, and that this should be the responsibility of the east side developer and be recovery from the city under Clause 10. So if we end up doing the work, we want it to be credited towards the recovery the city would otherwise request of us under Clause 10. Clause 43, page 35, right turn movements, responsibility for southeast and northeast right turn channelization has been allocated and already installed in the old Commonwealth Adsum and Dr. Jose Rizal Way location. So this right turn channelization has already been installed by this developer. We'll take responsibility for the other side, but as the phrase is right now, it suggests we have responsibility for both sides. So to clarify, we'd like to remove from Clause 43 the condition for southeast and northeast corners of old Commonwealth channelization, which are already installed. I'd like to note under Clause 42, the northwest and southwest intersection right turn channelization has been allocated under our subdivision application. We request Clause 43 recognize the northeast right turn channelization at the intersection of Jefferson Avenue and Dr. Jose Rizal Way will be the responsibility under our application, and to ensure equity, the responsibility for the southeast right turn channelization at this intersection should be allocated to the developer located south of Jefferson in eastern Dr. Jose Rizal Way. Clause 45 and 46, page 35 of the administration's report. Active transportation, 3-meter pathway on Dr. Jose Rizal Way and a 3.5-meter pathway on King Edward. We've indicated internally we are going to be building active transportation corridors. External to the site, we have a concern about the obligation that has been placed upon us. The development agreement parameters adopted by council do not require contributions to the city's network of AT pathways. These have been undertaken as a city expense and qualify for senior government subsidies. They have not been a requirement made of other developments bordering Chief Pegwas Trail and should be deleted as a mandatory requirement. We do not believe the development of policies surrounding active transportation requirements has been fully considered and appears to us to be very ad hoc, as evidenced by Clause 46, which allocates 100% of the cost to one side of the street only, and where the other side of the street is not making any contribution. Typically, Winnipeg development agreement parameters are more equitable. If the development agreement parameters are to be amended to include AT pathways as a local development responsibility, there's a due process for stakeholder consultation by the administration and council approval process. We request that Clause 45 and 46 be deleted. And raising this point with Mr. Rabin, you know, we're aware that process has been started, but we're suggesting that it should be concluded because we feel that how it's been applied here is inequitable, where our developer is required to pay 100% of the costs of bordering AT corridors. Our developers already indicated to the administrations we've included internal AT corridors as part of our project. So we believe that the Clause 45 and 46 should be deleted. Clause 48, which is page 35 of the administration report, This is partial dedication credit. The administration is indicating that they will only give partial dedication credit to the lineal pathways along the lake. And I think, you know, if it's fair, if I can paraphrase, because they're not considered to be fully usable open space because of the slope and the limited access off the pathway. And in our opinion, they should be included as full accounted as full contribution towards dedication. The idea of having pathways along the lake area opens up an amenity for the public at large, as a visual and attractive area, it gives a significant amount of identity and I think comfort and enjoyment to the residents. And to suggest that it's only worth 50% of a dedication, I think, is erroneous. And so we ask that Clause 48 be deleted. Our improvements to that open space are going to be significant, as illustrated in our slides, in terms of pathways and open space allocation. Clause 51, page 36, fencing backing onto parks within 10 feet of the path or play equipment. This is an amendment that Donna provided me shortly, which we talked at the beginning of the meeting. We, as a practice, as planners and landscape architects and as development managers, if we build parks, we don't want to build walls around parks. By walls, I mean by encouraging or facilitating the parks to be fenced in so that they're separated from the residential area. Where we would prefer that the parks that we build have no barriers in terms of the rear yards or side yards that look at it. We do appreciate from the administration's perspective that if a pathway is adjoining a house or if there's a play structure adjoining a private lot, that there should be some kind of fencing. So we would like to suggest the wording that was provided, that Parks Branch is acceptable to us, as long as we delete from that portion the words backing on to a proposed path or walkway corridor, so that the limitation of this would be is that that we would provide a uniform continuous fencing with or without a gate prior or per property at the developer's discretion for properties where park pathways or play equipment are anticipated to be within 3 meters of a residential property line. So that is the only area that we would consider to put approved fencing or install fencing. If it's a park that doesn't have a play structure or doesn't have a pathway within 3 meters, if it happens to be the soccer pitch, we do not want to put a fence around it. So we would like the community committee to consider that as a – that is all of our requests. Happy to answer any questions. I know it's a – piece of work or a lot of information, but I'm happy to answer any questions with regards to it.
Any further questions at this time?
I just have one question. Just going back, I didn't realize there was backing onto Jose, those cul-de-sac in the north part. In terms of building, how are they going to be dealing with parking?
Well,
in that cul-de-sac.
Well, it would be Front Street parking. Those are single-family lots.
Right.
So that would be the only location that we will be building a fence separating the rear yard from Dr. Jose Rizal Way. But the two cul-de-sacs have front access. There's...
Pulls the...
There's... One, two, six, ten lots, five on either side.
Would a yard have a driveway, or is it?
Yeah, each yard would have a front driveway.
Okay. Further questions? Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute recess, and we'll continue with those.
Thank you for your patience with us.
That was pretty quick.
I thought you could go on another hour.
You must have had your reading today.
Double scotch. That's what I want to do. We can.
We have two separate agreements. We recover and we deal with this developer, and that's a separate process.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.